Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast12. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast12. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Well, here we are at an unprecedented moment in date fight history.
We are indeed.
Let alone history.
Yeah.
It's time for the first listener-decided results.
Wow.
Of a week of date fight podcasts.
And what a week it has been. There have been turnarounds, there have been highs, there have been lows. Anyone who thought they knew what was going on with the public at any point this week
you sound
is a fool.
Just like... Da, 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 Andrew Marr at the beginning of the announcement of the general election.
The winners are
it's pathetic how intrigued I've been by this. I'm so ashamed of myself that all week I haven't checked, I haven't looked at any of the polls anywhere. So I genuinely have not a clue what's going on.
Well, I've added up all the results and I don't really have a clue what's going on either. So we have a choice to make.
Yeah.
Are we judging it by who won the most number of polls?
Okay. Or who you think should have won?
No. Given the fact that the Twitter and Facebook polls had different numbers of votes on them, who got the most votes for each subject?
Right. So it's the collegiate vote versus...
Yeah. Or... and who got the most votes in total for the entire week?
Oh, man.
And I warn you, each one of those ways of calculating it has a different winner.
How extraordinary.
Everything is down to this.
That's extraordinary.
What would you say instinctively is the most fair way of judging it?
In my head, because a week handily has an odd number of days... I saw it as we'd see, well, who won each day on a day-by-day basis.
Well, we can do that. I did run those on Twitter.
If you haven't cut your cloth in that way, then that's fine.
That's fine. That hasn't... We've done it by subject, but we can, in the future, do it by day.
No, it's fine.
I don't have those results here to hand. I'll have to go to Jeremy Vine, who will step up.
Yes, all the hexagons. Why don't you present all of those results in the order that you think... makes for the most interesting narrative arc.
Well, the first one I did, the easiest one to calculate is just who won how many polls.
Right.
Now, interestingly, on Twitter and Facebook, we got a different result for each of them. So, on Twitter, Jake won 5 polls, Nat won 4 polls, and 2 were tied.
Wow! This is so Brexit.
I know. On Facebook... Jake won 5 polls, Nat won 6 polls, and 0 were tied, leaving us with 10 each, and 2 ties. So if you go by who won the most polls, just as a blanket number, it's a tie. It's a complete draw.
That's extraordinary.
So if you go with the number of votes cast... Mm. The total... but by subject. So, for example, the National Trust and Hattie Caraway had more votes at the beginning of the week than we had by the end of the week because the last day people only had half a day to vote. So if you go subject by subject, who won the most subjects by the number of votes cast?
Yes.
Jake wins 5. Nat wins 6.
Wow.
But if you add all of the votes together for the whole week...
Yes.
Nat receives 180 votes. And Jake receives 184 votes.
That's extraordinary.
It's amazing. And actually, I had... Now, if you try and go back and do the maths, they may have changed because one of them was left open, so I had to actually draw a line under it at midday and write a thing under the tweet saying, stop voting on this, you're too late, because it was changing in front of my eyes, and those four votes went backward and forwards whilst I was watching. And I said, no, please stop.
Stop it.
Those are the numbers I'm taking.
Guys, it just shows how important it is to vote.
Yeah,
you've got to get out there and vote. Because you just never know. Guys, I don't care who you vote for. I do. I absolutely
I really do.
But please vote.
I've never said that. It doesn't matter who you vote for. Just vote. It absolutely does. If you're going to vote for the wrong people, stay home. Sit at home. Read a book. Watch an EastEnders omnibus. I don't know what this means because we hadn't worked out what we were doing anyway. But it shows an exciting future for the voting for Date Fight.
It certainly does. Well, I feel like, you know, with these things, with the systems in place in the UK and in America and stuff, the collegiate vote is always what wins, and it sounds like you won that by one.
Yeah,
I guess we should. Well, congratulations, first of all.
Well, thank you. But congratulations on getting the most votes during the week.
Well, thank you very much.
184 to 180. Yeah.
But I don't know. There's a long way to go.
Is there a forfeit?
I can't remember. What did we say we'd do? I'm going to post a photo of myself on social media with an appropriate slogan written across my forehead.
Okay, that sounds brilliant.
Fine.
If you would like to see Jake's tattooed forehead, check out social media some point in the near future.
Great. All right. Well, from the ashes of defeat, let me see if I can snatch another defeat. Let's kick off another week of date fighting. And here we go. Date fight! Well, so much for last week, because right here, right now in this podcast, we start afresh.
Yes, we do.
And we might as well kick straight off. So it sounds like we've got the same. Why don't we just get this one out?
Round one!
Let's get it out of the way. Let's go to the 19th of January, 1764, I'm assuming you're going to.
Yeah.
Yeah. When Bolle William Luxdorf, a Danish historian, wrote about a parcel that was sent to Colonel Paulsen, who opened it up. When he opened it, it says in his diary, when he opens it, there is to be found gunpowder and a
firelock.
Sorry. I couldn't read my own handwriting. Gunpowder and a firelock, which sets fire to it. So he became very injured, which is a nice way to say it. He became very injured somehow.
Yes, oh, I've become injured.
Well, he saw a gun and a finger pulling the trigger of the gun, and he became very injured somehow.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened, officer.
Well, funnily enough, there was a previous parcel bomb, wasn't there? That was exactly that.
Robert Harley, Earl of Oxford.
Yeah. Yes. It was like
that was three guns in a hat box.
Yeah. And someone went, wait a minute, there's a thread there, and cut the thread, thus.
Yeah.
Brilliantly.
Saving his life. Saving the Earl of Oxford's life. Do you know who it was who cut the thread?
No, who?
Jonathan Swift.
Good Lord.
It was Jonathan Swift who saw the thread and went, and leaped towards it.
Did they have slow motion in those days?
I imagine they must have done.
Yeah.
You can't foil a mail bomb without there being one. Other mail bombs were, in 1919, an anarchist group in America sent 30 mail bombs, including to Senator Thomas Hardwick. In 1939, the IRA sent 50 mail bombs.
Crikey.
Those were meant to explode in post boxes, though, rather than for individual people. And in 1961, Mossad sent one to an ex-Nazi and blew off his fingers.
Oh, I think you mean his fingers became injured.
His fingers became injured, that's right.
And his fingers became very injured.
And then there was the Unabomber, who sent 16 mail bombs and took 3 lives.
Wow.
Just to bring this bit down a bit.
Yeah, thanks very much.
We all had a lot of hatbox fun.
Yeah.
Now let's sit here in silence and contemplate the 3 people who lost their lives to the Unabomber.
I was enjoying the hatbox, sort of.
Let's go back to hatboxes,
sort of jolly and...
Do we know anything more about why someone was trying to kill Colonel Paulsen?
Colonel Paulsen? No.
Yeah.
No, no. I don't know why, and there isn't very much on him either. And, oh, who cares? It was a long time ago. I know that's not the attitude for this podcast.
That should be the top date fight. Who cares? It was all a very long time ago.
Come on.
I'll do the birthdays then.
Yeah.
Happy happy birthday to Pulcheria, the regent of the Eastern Roman Empire. We had someone called Pulcheria yesterday. We've got a Pulcheria today, so she's pretty as well. She had been queen regent with her for her younger brother, Theodorius. And when she became regent, she took a vow of virginity. But when Theodorius died, she needed to marry in order to provide a successor to him. So she took her husband, but insisted that he respect her oath of virginity. So, bad luck, Pulcheria's husband. Also, happy birthday to Edgar Allan Poe, the super goth and raven fancier. Happy birthday to Tippi Hedren. And Tippi Hedren, who was hired by Alfred Hitchcock after he saw her on one advert. He saw her in an advert on the television and had a contract for 7 years sent to her. So in her first film, The Birds, they said they were going to use mechanical birds in The Birds, but instead, for the final attack, she had 5 days of people throwing gulls and crows at her face.
Yeah, well, that was because she had refused to oblige him.
Yes.
In a sort of a bedroomy way. And he killed her career.
Yes, he kept her under contract, even after she'd done Marnie and The Birds.
That's right. And he basically just suppressed her. He didn't give her any other work, and she wasn't allowed to take any other work. And he killed her career simply because she had a... I mean, you know, that was very pre-Me Too. I can't imagine anything like that ever happens nowadays.
Well, quite. Melanie Griffith, who's her daughter, said that he spent so long... He wouldn't let her go home between shoot days on Marnie. And she said, remembering thinking that Alfred Hitchcock was trying to take their mother away.
Good God.
He also wouldn't let anyone else speak to her on set apart from him. He was a very odd man. So happy birthday to Tippi Hedren, and no happy birthday to Alfred Awful Hitchcock.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think he was an absolute rotter. And a very sick individual.
Agreed. Happy Death Day to Pierre-Joseph Proudhon.
Sorry?
Who was the father of anarchism? Pierre-Joseph Proudhon.
The Sorry.
Father of anarchism and the...
One more time.
Proudhon.
Who?
Proudhon. P-R-O-U-D-H-A-N. Okay. You know, the anarchist. He's good. He's got that thing. Property is theft. That's his.
Oh,
you know him.
Yeah.
He done that one. Also, happy death day to King Dagobert, who was the last of the Merovingian kings, who the British king refused to meet with because he had 3 wives at the same time. He was said to have the ruthlessness of Clovis and the cunning of Charlemagne, whatever that means. Also, happy death day to Hedy Lamarr. She was the first woman to simulate orgasm on screen, and she also invented Wi-Fi, or invented the system of flipping frequencies that led to the existence of Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and GPS.
Really?
Yes. Yes, she's brilliant, Hedy Lamarr. She was... she also came up with some sort of precursor for radar, I think, and she was busy making, in her trailer, on set for things. She used to go back and just make inventions and then send them off to be patented.
That's absolutely astonishing. I had no idea.
She was posthumously inducted into the National Inventors Hall of Fame in 2014 for her frequency-hopping spread spectrum technology, which she came up with to stop the Axis powers working out where radio-controlled torpedoes were. Well done, her.
Well done.
That sounds really patronising, because I couldn't possibly invent any of those things, so I shall just be in awe rather than expressing my approval.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
I've got a story which, on the face of it, looks pretty dull, but it's actually pretty exciting. This is the 19th of January, 1764.
Oh, yes.
And John Wilkes, an MP.
Mm.
Tell me you've got it, haven't you?
Nope.
Have we got a double-double? No, good. Okay.
I saw it and rejected it.
Right. Well, how much of it did you know? He was expelled from the House of Commons.
For?
For seditious libel.
Mm.
But do you know what the libel was about?
No, I don't know what the libel was about. I got as far as seditious libel and then didn't read any more. What was the seditious libel about?
Just goes to show you never can tell. Sit back and enjoy. John Wilkes and his friend Thomas Potter wrote a pornographic poem which was dedicated to the courtesan Fanny Murray.
I see.
It was called An Essay on Woman, and it was a parody of Alexander Pope's An Essay on Man. Now, the thing was that John Montagu, who was the fourth Earl of Sandwich, got hold of a copy of this.
Hang on, what year did you say this was?
1764.
So that's presumably the same Sandwich after whom the Sandwich Islands were named.
Yes, in yesterday's thrilling episode.
Yesterday's Sandwich Islands.
Yes.
It's only 12 years. Well, maybe it says a son or a... Yeah.
I'm all about the sandwiches. He was a bit of a one. He was a member of the Hellfire Club.
Oh, yes.
Which was a sort of pseudo-satanic thing where they had all kinds of parties. And he got hold of a copy of this, and he was very keen on this woman, Fanny Murray, and sort of kept her as a kind of courtesan. Is that the word I want to use? I think so. And he was absolutely furious. And mainly because this guy Wilkes, John Wilkes, he was a card. He was like a sort of Jeremy Beadle of his time. He'd done a prank at one of the Hellfire Club's meetings that involved the Earl of Sandwich. And he was like, this is my chance for revenge. Wilkes, what he did was he put on a seance at the club and just mucked about with it and scared him. So then Sandwich was like,
leave John Wilkes alone.
So then Sandwich read the poem out to the House of Lords in an effort to denounce Wilkes's moral behaviour.
They must have hated that. Oh no, don't read all the dirty bits out to me.
This is the best bit. I mean, the worst bit. So the Lords declared the poem obscene and blasphemous after 51 hearings.
Very obscene, very blasphemous.
And it caused a great scandal.
Read a bit more.
And in the end, Wilkes had to flee to Paris before he was put on trial. And in absentia, he was found guilty of obscene libel and seditious libel and was declared an outlaw on the 19th of January, 1764.
Nice.
But Fanny Murray, I mean, it's one of those things that you think, oh, what a thing, being a courtesan and stuff. Yeah, I mean, she was orphaned at 12. She was a flower seller and she got picked up and then basically passed around rich men in London. By the age of 14, she'd become a mistress. And that's when she moved to London. And at 17, she had become this kind of desirable thing that one diary from the day says, it was a vice not to be acquainted with Fanny. It was a crime not to toast her at every meal. Awful people.
No one comes out of that looking particularly good, that story.
No, not at all.
Not even John Wilkes.
She led the world in fashion and...
I've done a very funny poem about her, don't you know?
Yeah.
I've done a funny poem about your girlfriend.
Yeah. How do you? John Montagu, who the fourth Earl of Sandwich, he had a big nude portrait of her in his apartment, which he would show to his guests.
I worked with someone once who came back from holidays, back in the day when people took pictures.
Oh, yeah.
Like physical photographs, and decided to show us his physical photographs of his holiday, which included far too many of his girlfriend at the time, topless on the beach they were on, and he lingered over those, he showed them to us. And this feels a little bit like that, being unsettling, and you're not really sure what to do in that situation when the Earl of Sandwich shows you his massive portrait of his new girlfriend.
Where would you put yourself?
I mean, the food was good, was it? You had good food?
The first line of the poem, by the way, is, "Awake, my Fanny," and it compares her to the Virgin Mary.
Well, let's go on to a time when the English really covered themselves in glory. Which was the 19th of January, 1419, when Rouen surrendered to Henry V at the high point of the Hundred Years' War. Everything was doing brilliantly under Henry V, partly because France was doing terribly under Charles VI, who was mad. So we were winning, because Charles VI thought he was made out of glass. I don't know how he knew he was made out of glass, but he refused to be touched in case he broke. Anyway, Rouen was the most formidably defended city that had yet been besieged in the Hundred Years' War. There were 60 towers, each had 3 cannons. There were 6 gates with barbicans. A barbican is a fortified entrance to a gate.
Ah, thanks.
Just like the Barbican in London. Yeah. That was the fortified bit of the gate. You know, you can see a bit of the Roman wall going round the Barbican.
Yeah.
Well, that's where the Barbican bit was, the bit that the gate that stuck out.
Oh,
stuck
wow.
Out.
Thanks, mate.
There you go.
I love moments like that. You're great.
In order to besiege Rouen, Henry V put chains along the Seine so that nothing could go up and down the Seine. But Rouen was going to wait to be saved by the Duke of Burgundy, John the Fearless. And when the Duke of Burgundy, John the Fearless, heard that Rouen had been besieged by the hated English, he hid in Paris and refused to come out.
I didn't waste a second.
Quick, everyone, under the covers. They got so hungry they sent out 12,000 of the town's poor, but Henry V wouldn't let them go. So essentially the town's poor then had to live under the walls of the town, just eating nothing, with the English watching them starve. They did feed them once on Christmas Day.
Oh, wow.
That's nice, isn't it? They then let them starve until January the 19th, when the town surrendered. It was a huge victory for the English, obviously, and led to the Treaty of Troyes the next year, in which Henry V was made heir to the French throne. Unfortunately, he messed it up by dying very swiftly thereafter. Anyway, it just shows that it doesn't matter who was in charge in the late medieval period. Life was probably terrible, and some army or other was going to come up to your city and starve you.
Perfect.
But that's the high point of us being brilliant at having the Hundred Years' War.
People are just so great,
aren't they?
I don't know how regular listeners to this podcast have the will to live. Just go out and talk to anyone.
Like, we're becoming ever more disdainful of all of humankind all through history.
Maybe the hope is, you know, the hope is that perhaps slowly, incrementally, we're getting a little bit better as a species.
Well, I think we went on from that to mail bombs.
No, okay, you don't have to answer.
And we finished up the mail bombs, went from quite funny to Unabomber. So if anything, we seem to be... Maybe we just find it easier to laugh at dead people okay. from 1,000 years ago, because their mum was probably not listening.
Tragedy plus time and all that.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, I was trying to sort of lift us out of it, but you decided to take us straight back down. That's fine.
Join us tomorrow for more tragedy and less time.
Yes, Date Fight continues tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. What a pivotal episode this one was, I imagine.
Yes.
And do subscribe, do share, and we'll be back for more tomorrow morning.
See you tomorrow.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at freestylelibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at freestylelibre.us.